And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence from Bangor, Maine. Hello. Second hour on Wednesday, the 18th day after St. Paddy's, and I don't know, everybody went out, they got infected, something, whatever. All right, well, we're talking to Ralph. I'm going to have Derek introduce him, but he's a gentleman we were talking to, been around a long time, was a state legislator, you know, here. So it's he knows how it works. He's certified sane. He wanted to read the budget. So he sent in the guy. Everybody got out of the house, and they, you know, sent a psychiatrist in there to go, so why are you reading the budget before you vote on it? That's insane. So, you know, it's – I'm sorry, what?
Don't step on all his stories. I'm going to introduce him. I'm not going to tell all his stories.
No, you got to, you know, give him kind of what – You know, I don't want to spend 5 years on that one story. Yeah. You know, there, the story's done. Okay, so he's certified sane. That's what we're talking about. So anyway, he came in and he found these 100 gloves for a dollar. Okay, it's just, you know, dollar store, 100 gloves for a dollar. So I got those, and he gave me, say, oh, you got some gloves. Oh, that's I got a nurse friend. And we got Purell. You can't find it anywhere, but you got it. No, I go, that's very nice of you. Thank you. Oh, and toilet paper. So we get the right. Okay, that's another good ad. And alcohol that you can't find anywhere. When this whole thing started, you know, the first things that Donna and I did, we went and got in bulk. I mean, they have like double packs, which I didn't get stupid about it, but got enough to last a while. We got alcohol, hydrogen peroxide. We had a bunch of toilet paper from whatever. And the reason we had to get hydrogen peroxide and alcohol, because when we did it before, like 5 or 6 years ago, we went through it all. So we needed, over the years and kids and whatever, and, you know, make sure we get stocked up. So that was really nice of Ralph to do. Okay, introduce Ralph to the audience, please, Derek.
So this is Ralph Kaufman, came into the studio. He's a longtime friend of mine, and he's been an activist for I don't know how long. He'll tell you how long. He was a state legislator. He can introduce himself.
God, you suck at this, man. Ralph, go ahead and talk. Let's see how we got you on the mic.
Yeah. Well, I have been an activist a long time. Back in 1970, I was going to school at Wichita State University in Kansas. And Spiro Agnew, the vice president, came through, and I went down and held a sign up that said, Agnew's a crook, and I got beat up, arrested, had to go through two trials before I finally got found not guilty of exercising my freedom of speech. So
Wait. You held up a sign, Spiro Agnew, which was VP to Nixon or something.
Yep.
And was he running for president then, or was he, you know, VP or what?
Yep. And, he was coming and speaking in Wichita, and at the time he was involved in some controversy about getting kickbacks from his construction business. So I thought he was a crook.
You were correct, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, so you hold up a sign, and they charged you with sign holding?
I can't remember the specific charge, but the local sheriff was up for election, and he had his stormtroopers. There must have been, I don't know, dozens of them that all in military file came over and started pulling us around. And yeah,
wanted to explain it to you.
Yeah.
So this was what, 1970. Okay, 70. So in 1970, you get they're arrested.
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to court?
Yeah.
Did you get all the things? Did you plead not guilty?
And the judge found us all guilty, and I think it was a $100 fine, and we had the American Civil Liberties Union right there. They said, well, if anybody wants to appeal it, and I think there was four of us that did.
Out of how many?
Oh, maybe 18, something like that. There wasn't very many.
Yeah. So what's that percentage of 4 of 18? That's like you know.
25.
Yeah, it's a healthy percentage, 20. But, I mean, it's, you know, somebody wanted to say no.
Yeah, I did. Well, I didn't do anything wrong.
So you go and you said no, and then what happened?
I have to go to a jury trial. And after going through a jury trial and explaining it to them, we get to pick our jury. That was an interesting concept. And, yeah, they found us not guilty. So
very cool. So you got that. And you were how old then?
I was 20 years old. I was born in 1950.
Okay, so at 1970, you're already, you know how the man works.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so you couldn't wait to become the man?
No, I didn't want any part of that.
Well, how'd you become a legislator?
Oh, that was after years later. It was in the early 90s. I was in Old Town, Maine here, and the representative position was up, and I'd been in business here. We had a restaurant for a while in the 70s, and anyway, I thought, you know, I'd want to be a legislator. I had an apartment complex. I had them managed by somebody, and yeah, I took care of 70 college students, and you know, I had time, so I got elected to the legislature.
How much of a campaign did you run? Did you spend a bunch of money?
Well, actually, I was on the school board first. That was my first foray into politics.
So and after your foray into politics, tell me at each level what you learned.
Well, actually, if you really want to start with what started it, I was working and I became an injured worker. And then I was like, what a weird system. You know, everybody wants to drug you and, you know, just. So anyway, I became an activist and I joined this group called the United Injured Workers. Some ladies that were being harmed by solvents up at the airport in a factory, they got together and were protesting their conditions, no ventilation or not proper ventilation, all that. Anyway, I joined a group and next thing I know, I became the chairman and I was going all around the state starting groups and because workers' comp was a big issue with then. And, you know, people were getting killed out there in the workplace because it should be safety first. Well, anyway, so then I got on the school board, and then I became a representative. And when I got down to Augusta, I was curious. They were writing stories like I was the Democrat and in a Democratic town. Yeah. So I was the conservative, and the Republican was the liberal, or that's how they played it all. But anyway, I got down there because I told people I wouldn't pay attention to parties. It's got nothing to do with anything. And I mean, I was never an activist in the party or anything. I just happened to be a registered Democrat. And I thought working people, small businesses, you know, that's where I'd want to be, not corporations. And I got down to Augusta, and the Speaker of the House had been Speaker for 19 and a half years. And what happened, one of the things that happened was when there's a close election, the state police come, confiscate all the ballots, and lock them up in a room in Augusta, in the Capitol. And then when both sides can get together, they unlock them, and then they count the ballots.
Wasn't Augusta the town in Georgia where they were doing the voting after World War II, the soldiers came back, and they were corrupt, and they held siege of the ballots and everything? Wasn't that Augusta, Georgia?
No.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's the same thing, you know, same name in the same city. So this is Augusta, Maine, though, right?
Yeah. So anyway, all of a sudden, one night, the security guards caught the speaker's top aide and another Democratic Party and official in the room stuffing ballots.
No, say it ain't so.
Yeah, I wished I could have, but I didn't. So anyway, that was that was quite interesting. He called it Ballot Gate, and but nobody wanted to go after the speaker because they called him King John.
Well, we know why.
Yeah.
Is John Brakey original?
John Brakey. John Brakey?
From a, he's a voting, stuffing ballots activist.
Yeah, he's out of Arizona.
in Tucson. Has he always been in there? Because his
I don't know, but he has his nephew, his Eric Brakey, running.
He's running here. Yeah.
I've been. This is what got me started.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. Feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Live from Bangor, Maine, where we're talking to Ralph, right? Ralph, what's your last name, Ralph?
Kaufman.
Kaufman. Ralph Kaufman. All right. Now, let's go ahead and pick it up. You know, you tell a story, you're in legislature and, bad things, walk it through, and they had the election. Right. So they had guys in the sheriff's department. Now, this happened in 05. We got, for 08. In 06, I ran for Secretary of State in Arizona for the second time, because in 94, I'm going, look, let me tell you what they're going to do with these computers. Well, they did it. And I go, nah. That's what I'm talking about. So they passed legislation to where they would take the ballots and they put them in the treasure vault, and they had 24/7 webcams on them, and people would watch it. And then they were gone. And they went, what the heck? They found them in the Sheriff Arpaio's training room. Okay? So then I'm going, yeah. So we went to trial, court, and it just like, yeah, it's over with, and life sucks, and yeah, they did, and they're bad, and they could have done this, and they had multiple the seal numbers. They had them by the dozens so they could open and close them with the same seal numbers. And all that. I'm just like, wow. So we showed it's all crap. Well, you had the same experience, you know, and this was back in 72, you said?
No,
92. Yeah. Same time, you know, same crap. All right. So here they come. They're you find during the election in 92 that they had taken the ballots. They were stuffing them. How did they know they were stuffing them? They catch them with a camera? I mean, what?
Open the door, and there they were doing it.
Here, get up close to the mic.
Oh, that opened the door. The security opened the door, and there they were doing it. Had the box open and stuffing the ballots, filling them out.
See, wow.
Yeah, that election had about 25, you know, they were within 25, both candidates. So you wouldn't have to stuff many in order to. And I had a lady, she was a Representative Rand, who became Senator Rand. She was sitting behind me, and she tapped me on the shoulder when this was going on, and before they were caught, and said, "Don't worry, Ralph, it'll turn out the way we want."
These people are messed up in the head.
They thought I was one of them.
Oh, you were elected legislator.
That's all I knew. I was a state representative. I represented people. I didn't represent none of these guys. Yeah.
And so tell me about the budget thing real quick. I mean, I alluded to it. But.
Well, so the speaker, like even like rules committee, like the, all us new legislators wanted to learn the rules. So we had two meetings, and the third one he never showed up and never had no more rules meetings. That was another thing he did. So anyway, so you're on your own.
This is a speaker for 19 and a half years.
19 and a half.
And
King John, that's right. What they call them. Right. John Martin from Aroostook County. So anyway, where was I? So
the rules.
You're basically, you're on your own. You know, learn what you can. So I figured out that, even if they pass your law or any law, if they don't fund it, it just sits on a shelf, like it's not being enacted. So who does the funding? Who puts the budget together? One committee, the Appropriations Committee, made up of the leadership of the Democratic and Republican Party. They sit together and they decide. Yeah. And anyway, That's the way the process works.
So then they wanted you to vote for it, you know, and they'd slap this big thing in front of you and say, do it. Because I went through this in the 90s. I could see, I go, there's no legislator reading this 5-inch thick, 2-volume budget on just one department. No, and I go, they're not reading. I go, how the hell do they even know? They have legislative summaries. Somebody says this about that, and this person votes this, and you better, and here it is. Well, they have legislative counsel and so on, and you're just supposed to do what you're supposed to do. And then they want, and you wanted to read it, and they're like, tell me about that.
Well, another thing about the process is I can remember the speaker getting up and saying, okay, you know, when there's like, we got to discuss this issue, whether it's workers' comp or whatever it is, says, okay, the Democrats will meet in the House chamber and the Republicans will meet in room 221. And after hearing this over and over a few times, you know, because then you go to your group and they tell you how to vote. So I stood up one time on the floor of the House and I said, Mr. Speaker, can you tell me how I'm supposed to vote? I mean, can you tell me which caucus I'm supposed to go to?
Because you're, independent or something?
Well, I was still a registered Democrat, but I was elected to be independent. Republicans and Democrats elected me. You know, I just knew people from, you know, not their political persuasion, but
you're
I just knew people.
You're doing it wrong, Ralph.
Yeah. So anyway, I figured out the system, and I figured out the Appropriations Committee was putting the budget together, and that's where all the action was. So I started attending meetings. Now, you don't get paid per diem or anything unless your committee's meeting is in Augusta. Mm. Otherwise, you're paying yourself. So luckily I had, I moved in the Capitol building. I slept on the benches in the hallway, and then finally up in the legislative lounge when I found out that they didn't even tell us that, you know. And I did this for a couple weeks. I attended those appropriations.
So you didn't sleep there, live there for just during this time you're doing the Appropriations Committee?
Yeah, because they met from morning to morning. So it was, there wasn't much sleep involved, but I never had needed much sleep. So I had a clue of what was going on. And the day of the budget, I can remember the representative Thompson from Lincoln, he's going, I don't have a clue what's going on. Exactly, because they don't want you to. So here comes the budget. They put it on your desk in the evening, and 800 pages, and the next day you're supposed to know what you're voting on. Well, you go to the committee, and they tell you, yes, vote for the budget. We worked it all over. We, you know, but yeah, they did their thing, and they, you know, everybody got the piece of the pie. So anyway, the next evening, it comes time to vote on the budget, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. So I started reading it, and I'm looking at it and looking at it, and somehow I looked up, and there's a speaker going, you know, I couldn't hear him, but he was saying, vote. And I went, no, and I kept reading. And I didn't know that there was a rule that said if you sit in your seat, you have to vote. But he canceled the rules meeting, so how am I supposed to know the rules? So I Well, next thing I know, see, nobody else knows this is going on. It's just me and him, right? And next thing I know, he's got the sergeant of arms over, putting his hand on my shoulder and trying to lift me up. He had him wanted me to physically remove me.
To get you out of the seat.
Yes.
Yep.
And I was elected to the seat. He's not moving me, see. It's just the way I am. You know, it's nothing special, nothing, but I'm just, that's just that way.
No, you're semi-normal. They were all abnormal.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. Well, you know, when it's the truth, when you know the truth, I don't care if there's 1,000 people telling you, you know, the tree is pink, you know. If it's green to you, it's green, you know. You can be 2,000, whatever. But anyway, yeah, so I kept reading, and because the attempt to move me physically didn't work. So next thing I know, everybody's leaving the House chamber. He cleared the House chamber, and I just sat there in my seat. And my daughters, who were 10 and 8, were honorary pages then. So now threw them all out. And this is like everybody wants to go home, see. They don't want to sit there and, you know, talk and listen. They want to go home. It's hot, you know. I can't remember.
Oh, it's getting hot. We're going to get the rest when we come back after this break. You know, here's a legislator that got elected to represent the people on issues that he thought, you know, I'm going to do my job, do my due diligence. I didn't get here to be a scumbag. I'm actually going to read this budget. I went to the appropriations. I slept on the benches to do this. I'm doing my job. You're not allowed to do your job.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Roads are accessible by Love Bus. Yeah, we're going to do that. All right. Now, this is Ralph. Ralph is a legislator doing it. Okay, now we left off where? We're sitting here yakking. I'm trying to keep you from not. You know, Yeah. They try to pull you out of the seat.
Oh, yeah, okay. That didn't work. So next thing I know, everybody gets thrown out of the House chamber, including my kids, and I'm, like, sitting there by myself. So I'm, like, really bullheaded now.
Okay, now how old were you then?
42.
Okay, so you're not a kid. You know what's up.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, but anyway, so I'm like, what's going on? You know, it's unbelievable.
Get a little closer
and,
to the mic.
And so next thing I know, here comes the president of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, all the key committee members, the chairman of the committees, and they came and they were on the other side of my desk going, like, what do you want? You want a road? What is it you want? We'll put it in the budget, we'll vote, and we'll go on.
Ah!
And at that moment, there was a photographer up in the gallery and took a picture. I'll have to get that to you. And, you know, with all those guys over like that, and I'm there, I just want to know what I'm voting on.
So, go, yeah, you're voting on whatever you want, how much money you need.
Yeah, and I think everybody else should know what they're voting on. Well, next thing I know, everybody leaves, and I'm sitting there for a while, and, I don't know, 15 minutes, here comes a guy and sits with me, and he happens to be a psychiatrist. So the Speaker of the House called over to the Augusta Mental Health Institute and had a state psychiatrist come over and evaluate me on the floor of the House for 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours?
Well, everybody else was outside going, what's going on?
Well, what was going on? What was he asking you? What's the color of brown?
Somebody out there actually called my ex-wife to come get the kids, and they said that I was having an emotional breakdown because they knew a psychiatrist went in. So everybody's thinking that, and because they didn't have a clue of where did this all happen? How did this? Yep. Well, anyway.
That's how King John does that kind of thing.
So I kept telling the guy, I said, by whose authority are you here, sir? You know, like I was just walking him through it. So anyway, I ended up giving him my card, told because I'm a state representative. I represented everybody in the state, as I always said. And he came out and he said, nothing wrong with him, just politics. And I came out and I said, because, you know, cameras are rolling now. I said, do you realize I'm the only certified sane member of that entire body? And I challenge everybody else to take the same test I just took. Because I knew there was already some wackos in there, even by that time.
They ran away, they're afraid.
Yeah. See, they even tried to get back at me because they had the redistricting, which is, you know, something you're familiar with. And what they did is they John Martin's in northern Maine. They started from down there. And the majority of the people in Maine live in the bottom two counties, Cumberland and York. So they get what they want, he gets what he wants, and everything in the middle gets squeezed. Like, you know, mental health dollars, for example. There'd be like, for whatever treatment, say you'd pay like $5 up in Aroostook County, you'd pay like $6 down in York and Cumberland, but in my district, in the middle, you'd get like $2.50. See, so that's how they did it. They divided the state up, but when you do that, if you get more than you're supposed to get, it comes at somebody's cost. So I was putting bills in like equalized mental health funding for the whole state so everybody gets the same and blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, they did the redistricting, and they put my district, you know, I had like about 10 towns, real small towns or townships. They put them in like 10 different districts so that like my district just disappeared. And I found out through the process that you can argue that in front of the Supreme Court. So I went in front of the Supreme Court, argued that all our towns should be together. We have our own newspaper. We have everything. They actually had, like, Milford, right next to Old Town, was connected to Cherryfield down east on the coast of Maine, two counties away, and it went through the woods with, like, about a 10-mile-wide swath.
Of course they did.
Across,
I know why. Because they can, you know.
Yeah. I just argued common sense, but like I did. I argued a case in front of the Supreme Court, and I won. They agreed, and then they had to start and over and carve everything up again, you know. But it was an interesting process. But after all this was happening and some other things, can't remember at the moment, I was the only one that put the order in that removed John Martin after 19 and a half years. Everybody else was no way, because that's
political. The order in? What does that mean?
Well, nobody wanted to do anything. He was going to stay Speaker. So I put an order in. You go down to the revisor's office where they write the laws, and you tell them I want an order written and put on the schedule that to remove the Speaker of the House, to have a new vote. So they had to come to me and sat down and said, look, he's agreed to step down after 6 weeks so we can have time to find a new Speaker. Will that satisfy you? I said, sure. And he left. He didn't finish his 20 years.
Oh, that's why he's 19 and a half. So you're the half.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure they put in a hell of a, you know, humdinger, better, you know, more constitutional guy right behind him, right?
Well, he was a Methodist minister, so he was like a real neutral, nice guy, you know, like...
Was it an upgrade?
But he was part of the party, the Democratic Party. And incidentally, during this process, I stood on the floor of the House, and I resigned from the party, and I've been independent ever since. So, but...
You're one of them.
Yeah.
Well, how the heck do you know Derek? How'd this all come about, Derek?
I think we met... I don't know how we met, through Dana Kaufman at some point years back.
And
I
mean, Dana's like a libertarian guy or
Dana Snowman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I met Dana back in the 90s. It was a libertarian party meetup we used to have at a local restaurant.
A lot of stuff got done, did it?
No, not really. But I learned a lot. Dana introduced me to Ron Paul. He handed me a speech that Ron Paul had given on the House floor. And Dana was really into money, so... We went to those meetings he introduced me to the money system. There was another guy that had made some videos, but that's how you did it on VHS tapes in the 90s before YouTube, to learn about stuff. We didn't have Mike Maloney. And I met quite a few people through them, but I kind of got disinterested in the whole thing because it wasn't very actionable. You know, there was a lot of complaining about stuff, but... I just kind of got out of the scene. I focused more on my career and the stuff I was doing until 08. And I started getting calls from the Ron Paul campaign, better go to the caucus. So, yeah, I'll go to whatever they call it when you go to the town and become a delegate to go to the state.
Straw poll and is that what we have here?
Yeah, whatever it is, delegates or something.
But anyway, I went to the state convention for Ron Paul in 08, me and my wife Donna, and... kind of reunited with all they were just everybody that I knew from back then was there, and I think that was probably around the time that I met Ralph
again.
At
the church where Ron Paul came.
Well, that was after 12.
Is that 12?
We all got together in 12, but I started getting more active around 08 and rediscovered the Free State Project, who I'd been following, you know, before they even made their vote. But I just got out.
What
of
year
it,
was it I, that we met? At Porkfest at time.
It was Porkfest 9 or Porkfest 10. It was Porkfest 9 that we met.
So what is that? That's 10, 11?
Yeah, it was after the 2012. It was probably 2013. It was after 2012 campaign.
So this is, you know, the one thing, you know, Derek is just such a integral part of a lot of the stuff that we were talking about Saturday for you guys to do. If it's not for Derek, you going to do it? You going to code that and do it in the website of the kind of the, you know, push the button stuff? Is that you?
Kind of takes everybody, right? I mean,
but I got to do what I got to do, though. I'm trying.
Yeah, Ralph's got a YouTube channel he's been working on. He's been putting up regular content on that. And I went over there to take a look, and he was, what are you having trouble with? Something. What was the volume? Just the levels, yeah. So I went over and looked, but he had it all set up. I mean, he did it, figured it out.
You know, when we were Saturday night, you know, I hear these stories after we were talking a lot with Dan and Dana. And, you know, you're sitting over there just kind of quiet. You know, you didn't have a lot of stories to tell. Yeah, we'll talk about what you heard, you know, when you come back. Because once, towards the end of the evening, you're telling your story, I'm going, what the hell? Get your butt on the radio, boy. You know, so this, what might they do now? And see, I keep telling everybody, I go, it's the grandpas. It's the guys that don't think they know. They know. We'll be right back.
From the second letter of Captain Mark. Any pirate knows that commerce is communication. Markets condensed oceans of information into a single price. Innovations in communication are circumventing the scrutiny of the crown. This signals a change in the coin of the realm. The crown uses digital currency to surveil, censor, seize, and destroy wealth at will, so pirate currency must protect us from this weaponized money. We need to move funds further, faster, cheaper, and without third-party observation, basing decisions on an accelerating flow of information. So pirates require nearly instantaneous transactions with no arbitrary limits on volume or artificial influences on fees. Most importantly, a pirate currency must preclude centralization. Otherwise, it will become another link in our chain to the crown. A superior currency will result in the obsolescence of the coin of the realm and the extinction of the crown itself. Trade above the grid. Join us at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And we're live from Bangor, Maine with Ralph and Derek Slopey. This is an awesome find. You know, thanks, Derek. You know, this is like, this is fun.
There's some cool people up here. And, you know, we had a get together at my place on Saturday, and Ernie got to meet a lot of the guys that I knew up here. And we really, the group up here needs to get together more. So we're talking about getting together every other week or so. And,
you know, they each have their own interests. They got, you know, but they're not, well, my thing is, I operate, well, you heard all the crap I was going on about and how to do stuff and everything. Because my thing is, it's just general public opinion. And if you spend a decade on all this trying to change the government's mind or certain legislators or, you know, it's really being run by they, them, those that are ruling you, at the, you know, the town manager kind of crap. And I'm going, you're not going to change their mind. They're messed up in the head, you know. It's the public. It's general public opinion, and every campaign should be to educate them what you know and what they're doing and make them say it. And I go, we can have a, if you took all this effort, you know, like Dan has been doing all this stuff, I'm going, if you took even a fraction of that effort trying to convince them of informing the people what was going on, you wouldn't be in this situation now. I guarantee it. This is what my experience is. So I'm going, here, and that's why I was showing them all the tools that we had. I said, this is what this Love Bus Tour is about. You know, it's sharing on certain things. We're going to be doing a lot on this mandatory vaccine stuff. And after all this corona crap, here it comes, man. They're going, ooh, big pharma, making sure you don't get some out of that if they didn't cause it, you know, certainly amping it up. You know, who do you think owns the media? So then I'm going, all right, that's important. If it pleases the crown, can I occupy my own land? I don't need this permission slip thing, so that's going to be a big deal. But in the process of doing that, everybody's going to have their own issue. How do you do it? How do you have the impact? How do you educate? How do you get to where? Because now they're worried about this globalism thing taking over, and we're just going to have rulers from the UN kind of stuff was heavy going. But one of the side effects of this illness is that you have nation states are going, nope. We don't give a crap what the European Union thinks. We're shutting down our border. We're taking care of our people because our people are pissed off. And we're, you know, blah, blah. So the mindset is changing. And that's what started with Trump, this America First thing. Merca. We've got to be Merkins, you know. And this is, you know, I call them MKers, Merkins, man. You know, so Merca, you know, is going to be about Merca, you know. And Canada is going to be about Canada. I don't know who closed the border, Derek. Was it Canada or the U.S.?
Both have now. Trump just said that they're cooperating with Canada to close the northern border. So, wow. And this is what we were saying.
So Canada, you know, goes, walls. No, we fired you first. I mean, you know, you're fired.
Yeah,
no, you're fired.
So
no, you're fired.
Canada closed the border first. I guess that means, yeah, so they're in charge of who comes in and from the U.S., and U.S. in charge of who comes in from Canada. So the U.S. is not letting Canadians in now. So maybe it's a tit for tat a little bit, but this is what we were saying, that, you know, I'm not worried about the wall to, because it's going to keep Mexicans out. I'm worried that the wall is going to keep us in.
Yeah, here we go. This is, I mean, it all comes out in the wash, you know, sooner or later. And then at the end of it, you evaluate and go. And it's like we watched V for Vendetta just last weekend. And it was, there's one line, they're going on asking this one guy that was a colonel during the whatever. And he goes, you know, it was, we did what we had to do. There were very tumultuous times then, and we did. That's all I got to say about that. You know, yeah, whatever. You know, the scare justified where we did get over it and move on, and sucks to be you. And, you know, tens of thousands of people died. It's not my problem. So this is what we're going into. It's going to be all this under fear. They can mold you and do whatever the hell they want. You know, we're in a post 9/11 coronavirus world or some BS. So I'm going, nope. So this is what why I want to help you guys, but it's not just going to be you guys. I'm hoping to have hundreds of people to help. And all the tools that we showed you about the trash can flyers and the newspapers and online magazines and the special edition, everything that we do, that is what I make of service to you. Now, fortunately, you got Derek here. You know, I anything Derek says he wants to do, I'm there, man, you know, just because Derek. You know, what do you want to do? Let's go kick ass. So he's ready to work with you guys on some stuff. Good. You have your meetings. You come together. You know, we use Maine as an example. Whip ass. The whip ass from a state legislator that knows.
Yeah, I do.
Yep.
You so do you.
Yeah, I do.
There's
been
a few
there,
of us
that.
Around here. If we could all get together, that'd be it.
Well, what do you think the main issues, the things that, you know, would be Maine would be interested in? What's the one? You know, it's like they close the schools, and everybody's going to start finding separate daycare, how they're going to educate, who they're going to do about different stuff. I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, do you see where the governor of Kansas said there would be no more school this year?
Yeah, they say, yeah. You know, a couple of weeks, 4 weeks, no, a month. I know, but I mean, hell, that's the end of the year. Might as well just screw it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll turn schools into private institution of factories or whatever by September. I don't care. They're not doing me any favor anyway.
Yeah. So we got some information on. So our kids go to public school in the area here, and they had closed. They closed the school initially just for Monday, but then on Sunday night before even Monday, they said, well, we're going to close for 2 weeks. And now they're going to try to do like remote learning. They're going to the state of Maine bought all the elementary or high school kids' laptops or something like that. So everybody's got a laptop. Yeah. They're not allowed to take it home, and it's locked down, so they can't use it. But they sent all the laptops home. So I think this was pre-planned. Now they're going to do some sort of online meeting where they actually go to their classes from home on these laptops they sent home, and it's using Google. It's using this Google. Like Google meetups to do this. So the school system has really hung their hat on Google as well. They use Gmail at school. They use Google Drive at school and this Google Docs at school. And it's
going to be on your permanent record.
Yeah, and yeah, it will be.
It's all tracking. I saw this with the Khan Academy. They came out with this really cool software that Silicon Valley, this guy Khan, you know, K-H-A-M, whatever, you know, Khan Academy. And it was so kids can learn, you could track it, and then it got to where the teacher could see it, the parents could see it, you can see how much they're struggling, not everybody learned at the same rate, and then once they got it, then it hockey sticked and understanding the mastery of blah, 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 blah. So what'd they do? Palo Alto school system, they go in and they go, it's a collectivized, you know, everybody gets to see and here's the data thing, and oh, by the way, you need to eat your Cheerios or something. They're going to sell them, you know, the next, you know, G.I. Joe, the Kung Fu Grip or something. So, you know, you have Microsoft comes in, fully funds, goes in, woohoo, we're going to be on the permanent record. And this thing, if they start closing the schools, it's not working, you know, it's not educating, and they're not really getting what they want inside their head. They want, when we started doing emails and stuff back in the early 90s, about 93 is when I, 92, 93, when I first got my first emails, and I got burned in 94, and I'm just sitting there in my, you know, recovering in the bed, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. I go, for the first time in human history, the crown gets to see inside your head. They know what you're thinking. They know how you think. They know what gives you the reaction. So they want to put the little smiley face emoticons on your Facebook account. And if they can't figure out what you think about it, they ask you, well, how did this article make you feel? Here's, you know, 8 selections of whatever the hell.
Right.
I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? So now if they get the children out of the schools and they get you online doing this, gee, I wonder if we're going to be freer. You see my point?
Not freaking likely.
Not likely. They're not doing this for our benefit. So it has to be offline. It has to be private. And I said, when they do, because I have one Khan Academy account that all my grandkids use, but they game it. When they do something and you get a little reward and all that. Well, my brother went on the account and he lowered my score. I want my own account. I go, no, you get one. It's mine. I'm not, you know, plugging you guys in to all, you know, hell no. It's the same material. I don't care about the game thing. I just want you to learn it. So this is what I need. I want Jarvis, not Alexa. I want to be able to have my own AI, my own try, my own, and you download it on a Superman crystal and I plug it in. And I got all the information. They can suck it. because this is all about collectivizing everything. And you watch what's going to come out of this into the next digital era. They're going to, yeah, you're going to be start hearing about how bad the school system is and it doesn't work and Trump's going to, and conservative, and we're going to take care of business and the kids and whatever the hell. And what's going to happen? They're going to take the Matrix plug and plug it in the back of their head. That's it. You got to be aware of that. How far off do you think I am, Ralph?
No, you're right on.
I think I just got a text from Tim Pachote, and he says, see, what was it here? He goes, yep, red alert, reserve requirements. Come on, open up. He goes, red alert, reserve requirements is at zero. You called it 627 mark. And then, you know, put it on. I don't know who called it or I did or whatever, or somebody. I mean, you know, it's not like I was the only one to do this. But the they go zero requirements. That means that they don't have to keep anyway. This repo market thing is done.
No limit on money printing.
No limit. Well, there's no limit on, they don't have to show a reserve. They call it the Federal Reserve.
Well, that's
no reserve.
Supposed to be the limit. They have to have 1%, or they call it 10%, but really it gets...
They're just going to open up the spigot. They're going to fund. They got to save the system. This is. We just watched a Big Short last night.
Yeah.
And I told you, I said exactly the same thing is going to happen exactly the same way, and they're just going to call it something else. Well, this repo thing that they did, where the government was buying up any and all assets, it's TARP on continuous replay.